Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 40%. Up to 40% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast, presented by Allied Home Security.
You know, Wade, when we were talking about what we're going to talk about right now in the previous segment, I had said that everybody always brings up Tom Brady as the guy that was a sixth-round pick. So, hey, you could find your quarterback in the sixth round, which you theoretically you could.
It's possible.
You could find, Tony Romo, undrafted.
Anything's possible.
Russell Wilson, third round, all of those things are possible. But I always forget that I really – when I talk about not banking on getting a great player as an undrafted rookie or as a sixth-round draft pick, the guy in Houston that matters is Arian Foster.
Right.
Because in Arian Foster, I think he set expectations for some of our poor undrafted rookie free agent running backs way too high for a long time. I think a lot of people thought, like, hey – where's the next Arian Foster coming in the late rounds, or is it undrafted rookie? It's got to be coming right down the pike, shouldn't it? It's not so easy to find an Arian Foster.
Yeah, it doesn't quite work that way to have a guy that has that type of balance and vision and play strength and be able to pull off on people and not get caught from behind. Like, he's a special talent that fell in the draft just because of things that went on at the University of Tennessee. And so it's unfortunate for him that he decided to go to school there, and it ended up costing him initially in his NFL career. But it worked out for him in the end. He became, you know, one of the top five players to ever play in this franchise history, and was a hell of a running back, and my favorite guy to block for, and the best running back that I ever blocked for. And I blocked for some good ones, but Arian Foster, what he was able to do as an undrafted free agent, that definitely jades, the expectations of fans here that says, well, if Arian can do it, why can't you? So
yeah.
There's some guys that I'm sure that might want to live up to those things, but those are some tough shoes to fill.
So Sean Pendergast is out, by the way. Wade Smith, former Texans offensive lineman, obviously is in. And I did want to go back and I can't remember if it was Greg Rajan or John McClain that wrote this article in the Chronicle, but they pointed out some of the mid and late round picks that the Patriots made when Nick Caserio was their personnel director. Because I think that's relevant. Look, hey, could the Patriots draft receivers in the first and second round? Not really. Not that good at it. But in terms of getting some good role players in the mid and late rounds, they've done a hell of a job. And that's what's relevant for right now. You know, so I think that, not that I expect them to strike on one of these guys this year, but it is the kind of thing that, I kind of think they have to strike on at least one guy like this. The first one and the most obvious one, because he just retired, and there was a ridiculous debate over whether this guy should be in the Hall of Fame or not. He never will be. But Julian Edelman had a hell of a career. And frankly, I blame the Braxton Miller pick by the Texans on Julian Edelman, because Bill O'Brien was the first guy to actually do a study on Julian Edelman, or at least that's one version of the story I heard.
Yeah.
And when Bill O'Brien was being a quality control coach or an offensive assistant when he first got with the Patriots, they said, hey, check out this quarterback, this college quarterback, Julian Edelman, and tell me what you think of him. And Bill O'Brien saw him and thought, well, this guy's got versatility, can do it all. So I think that when O'Brien was evaluating Braxton Miller, there was a little bit about him that maybe had a soft spot in his heart for quarterbacks converted to wide receivers. Except with Braxton Miller, he at least had the benefit of seeing some actual wide receiver film on him in college too. But yeah. I don't know about is there a Julian Edelman out there right now? Maybe. I think maybe Nick Caserio to do better than Bill O'Brien was maybe Nick Caserio does a better job of actually identifying dependable, tough, and smart.
Yeah, I think the thing about it is this, man. Like a guy like Julian Edelman, you found that guy in the seventh round, right? Anytime you're getting in the sixth and seventh round undrafted, that's when you take these flyers on guys that have played a different position in college, and now you're going to try to convert them to something different in the NFL and use their versatility to see if that can make something out of them. But when you talk about the Texans this year having, you know, starting off the draft in the third round, let's not try to find Julian Edelman in the third round. Let's find a guy that can play that might have fallen in the draft because of whatever reason, the Justin Reed type of guy that was considered – much higher value, and you pick them up in the third round because he dropped for whatever reason. But that's the type of guy that I'm looking for the Texans to pick in the third round, the fourth round of the draft. They got to hit on those guys. But yeah, like you said, Julian Edelman, they found him in the seventh round. They took a flyer on him, and it worked out tremendously. And to me, those personnel guys from that New England tree, they have a system in place, and they have methodology that I think is – and I haven't done the numbers on it, but I would suspect that their numbers of having success is doing it that way later in the draft is better than anybody else's in the league, because they have so many examples of guys that they've been able to get extreme value out of guys late in the draft. So that's what I'm looking forward to see out of Nick Caserio is who is that sneaky under the radar guy that he's going to be able to hit on that nobody else is really looking at. Like Julian Edelman or a Matt Slater or just whoever you can think of that's been in that Patriot world.
That's where it gets dicey. Is it's one thing to do that later in the rounds, and that's where there's so little risk that taking a chance on upside, and maybe a guy's got a bad knock on him because his college coach just didn't like him. Sometimes. Right. That's the craziest thing that you learn in the NFL is, like, from situation to situation, sometimes there'll be a guy that had a knock as a bad character guy in college, and you get to know him, and you're like, man, this kid's awesome. Yeah, like, what the hell? Yeah. What the hell was his college coach's problem? Because this kid's, you know, and maybe he was immature in college, but he figures it out. And then vice versa, sometimes there's guys who are thought of as absolute Eagle scouts where you're like, this guy's a kind of a son of a bitch. I don't like him one bit.
Yeah, you got to think about it. These coaches in the NFL – they have relationships with a lot of the coaches that are in college football, and they trust them. They take them at their word. And so if there's a coach that says there's something negative about a guy that, you know, I wouldn't take this guy, I would have rather not had him on my team, whatever it is, that can affect someone's draft status and their ability to go to certain rosters. But then you take a flyer on a guy late in the draft, you say, well, damn, this guy, maybe they just – those two guys' relationship wasn't great, but he's been awesome since he's been here. And that's certain things that the draft prospects have to fight against, is that you don't want to burn any bridges, because it can cost you in the beginning. It also can cost you in the long run of you getting opportunities to play at the next level.
You know, this is the one thing. If we go up higher to the third round, and that was what you and I talked about a little bit yesterday, I feel like the third round is where it gets dicey when you're trying to bet on a guy that has gotten knocked down for some reason. Because if they've gotten knocked down for something, like that third round pick still feels really valuable. And it feels like you're taking a swing on a guy that you're hoping it turns out that he actually does love football, or you're hoping that it works out that he actually is mature. Like, I would rather take a guy in the third round who has first or second round physical ability, but he comes from a smaller school, or he was injured, but he absolutely loves football. Mm-hmm. You know, like he's not, because forever with the Texans, there'd be guys. And, you know, you have to go back to whether it's – okay, Deontay Foreman, who had a whole lot of physical ability and talent as a running back, but he went to Texas, you know. And, like, he's had his chance to show exactly what he is and what he is not. Braxton Miller. Braxton Miller is an interesting one because Braxton Miller didn't really have a chance to show what he was as a wide receiver. The Patriots, according to Michael Lombardi, had basically said no way to Braxton Miller. They didn't like something about either his attitude or the way that he was all about himself. This was Michael Lombardi's version of the story. That kind of falls into the category of some of these guys that the Texans have taken in the third round where you just didn't know if they were all that into football or into the grind, I suppose, the way some other hungrier guys are.
Yeah, and you have to have that element to you if you're getting drafted in the third, fourth, fifth, sixth rounds, those type of guys that are later round picks. You have to have the element to you in order for you to overcome it because apparently your talent is not at the position to where somebody say, hey, we got to draft this guy day one, regardless of what potential issues that might be going on that would potentially knock him down. And so you got to have that element to your game.
The other names he mentioned real quick, the last one is the one that I'm most intrigued by. Marcus Cannon was a fifth-round pick, ended up being a longtime starter at right tackle. I think he's probably going to play guard for the Houston Texans this year. Trey Flowers, I would kill for a Trey Flowers right now. And then I would – you know what would be even better, Wade, is if they draft a Trey Flowers in the fourth round and then Casario's smart enough not to give him the contract that Detroit did 4 years later.
Yes.
Like that – just become that team that drafts well, but they're not going to overpay when it's time to keep them.
Yeah, and that's the way to go about it. And then what you do is you let them go elsewhere, and then you pick them up when it's like year eight for him after he's played that 2 or 3 years over with the big money and they decide to move on from him, and then you bring him back into the fold. And
yeah.
To me, that's the best way to go about it. It's interesting that you say that you think that Marcus Cannon is going to play guard this year. I got to tell you, man, the Texans don't have a very good track record of bringing guys in that played one position very successfully at a different place and then come into this place and play a different spot. I'm not a fan of that at all. Like, I understand that Titus Howard is the right tackle here and he's the future per se, but I'd much rather move a young guy that has not done anything in his life as an offensive lineman more than, you know, a year or a year and a half. Like, he's been an offensive lineman for like 3-4 years, period. So he's more flexible at this time, I think, than a guy like Marcus Cannon that's been a right tackle for his entire NFL career. I would love to see that move of Titus Howard move to guard and then Marcus Cannon be your starting right tackle. Or if somebody has brought this up before, potentially trading Laremy Tunsil before the draft, and then you move Titus Howard to left tackle and you have Marcus Cannon to right tackle. But the whole idea of bringing in Marcus Cannon, a guy that's been very successful – being a right tackle in the league and then bringing him in here to play something else, I just think Jeff Allen, I think Zach Fulton, you name a guy, I think the fact you drafted Nick Martin, that he could have been a guard, they decided to put him at center. There's just been so much, and to me that would be more of the same. I don't want that at all for Marcus Cannon or the Texans offensive line.
That's where I understand where you're going with that because it isn't so simple. I know a lot of times people think, oh, it's just simple. This guy can just switch positions. It's no big deal. It's just a little different footwork. I guess if these were two young guys and Marcus Cannon had, you know, like 7 years in front of him or something, I just look at Marcus Cannon, I watch him play, and he feels more like a guard to me than Titus Howard does. Like, I don't know how much sand in his pants Titus Howard has. He looks a little bit more finessey. You know, he's just got he can move pretty well, and he's got room for improvement with his technique. But I don't know if I can see him down in there getting in the fist fight in a phone booth the way I can envision Marcus Cannon getting in a fist fight in a phone booth, and I can't do it with Titus Howard.
I see where you're going there. I would look at it like this though: Marcus Cannon, he's got the guard mentality where he's gonna fight you. But I like that guard mentality out there on the edge with having the technical ability to be a consistent pass protector and then also in the run game. Titus Howard, you figure that dog out by necessity. If you get moved to guard and you got to start, you're going to figure it out. I'm either hit him in the mouth or I'm going to be watching football. And I think Titus Howard is going to be – he'd be that type of guy that figured out, I'm going to hit this guy in his mouth so that I can continue to progress as a player. I just think Titus got that in him. I like the idea of Titus Howard at guard and Marcus Cannon at tackle. Now, will they do it that way? Who the hell knows? But I'm a bigger fan of that move as opposed to bringing in Marcus Cannon and putting him on the interior.
The one guy that intrigues me the most, and this is because it fits a consistent pattern with Nick Caserio and the New England Patriots, was Matthew Slater, who's one of the most decorated special teams players in NFL history. He was a fifth-round pick in 2008, and there's one thing that the Patriots do really, really well consistently. It hasn't been as good the last couple years, but their special teams are very regularly in the top five, almost always in the top 10. A lot of that comes down to the general manager. I mean, once Brian Gaines started making selections over Rick Smith, the Texans special teams got a lot better.
Yeah.
And I think that was one thing that Bill O'Brien, to his credit, I think, put more importance on over time, was getting better at special teams. So that's I hope that continues to be a strength for the Texans. The NFL regular season schedule is going to be released next month. The Houston Texans are giving you a chance to win big. It's the Houston Texans schedule pick'em presented by Caesars Rewards. You can attempt to guess the order of the Texans' 17 opponents, and you could be entered to win some great prizes, including a grand prize VIP Vegas vacation. Also up for grabs are Texans club tickets, autographed memorabilia, and more. Enter now at HoustonTexans.com/pick. That's HoustonTexans.com/pick. It's the Houston Texans schedule pick'em presented by Caesars Rewards.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Get to a certain age, Wade, and you got to be sure that the harmless flirtations turn into creepiness. It's just flat out creepiness. Mm-hmm. We were looking at a conversation. Somebody thought he was flirting with a female that both Wade and I both know. And I was like, dude, this is just creepy, man. You might have to DM that guy, Wade. Yeah. We don't know the guy.
In order to DM people, I believe you have to follow them. And,
not necessarily.
Oh, you don't?
My DMs are open. Anybody can DM me.
I have closed DMs. You know what I mean?
I guess the only time I regret doing a DM, open DMs, is when I am talking about the Astros in another city.
Yeah.
And I make any kind of an excuse for them over the cheating scandal, or even just try to explain like the things that are known and the things that aren't known. I get anywhere between 2 and 5 like pretty aggressive messages, a lot of clown emojis and everything whenever I do anything. Usually they're coming out of New York because, you know, God's people up there for sure. So that's how I know that you can indeed have your DMs open.
Yeah, trying to be Will Actually Guy to people out of state just doesn't work out quite the same way as it does people in Houston that have been here. You know, and saw everything transpire firsthand. It just didn't quite work out the same.
I made a joke on the Ross Tucker podcast about I made something like I basically made some innocent joke about the poor Astros or something. They've never done anything wrong. You know, like very sarcastically.
Yeah.
Like, I don't understand what the hell could be. I don't understand why on earth God could be punishing the Astros. And I got, the Astros were involved in one of the biggest cheating scandals ever. Too many concussions for your ugly ass. And then clown emoji, clown emoji, clown emoji.
That's just mean. That's were you more hurt by the concussion part or the ugly ass part?
Yeah, I'll be frank with the ugly ass part. The problem with the concussions part, this is what I don't like about the concussions part. It's not the actual insult itself. It's the lameness of the joke.
Yeah.
It's like when somebody says, Houston, we have a problem. It's just too easy, you know? And it's like, so it's, especially when it's somebody who didn't understand that I was joking.
Yes.
And then they come back at me with a really lame joke. That's when, that bothers me more than anything. It's the principle of the thing other than the actual insult itself. Yeah, the ugly thing, because this is on Instagram, and I think I'm pretty well curated. I think I'm pretty
that's
pretty
an interesting way to
Instagram.
Put it. Well, yeah. Curated.
I don't use filters, but I curate. I don't let the ones that show me as I actually am on there.
Well, then,
I don't let the real photos make an appearance.
Listen, and all that matters is you know somebody that likes the way you look. You have that one, and that's your wife,
yeah.
And that's all that matters. It doesn't matter whoever thinks you're ugly. It doesn't matter. Your wife thinks you're attractive. That's important.
This is insulting me even more than that guy now.
The
patronizing is really
pissing
me off.
I use the same mentality. Somebody could say something negative about me. I don't give a damn. My wife likes it. I mean, whatever it may be, shaved head, no beard, beard, whatever. My wife likes it. That's all I need. I'm good.
Okay, so speaking of the Astros, who have never done anything wrong and deserve nothing but the good graces of God, let's go through these excuses that I've seen for them, or that maybe I've made for them myself in the last week or so, 2 weeks, gosh, it's going on 2 weeks now, of this misery, of this atrocity. Okay, tell me if you buy this, and I think I know the answer to this one because you gave me this one. Miles Straw, and he missed yesterday because of his reaction to the COVID vaccine, but it seemed like on Tuesday when he made that bad non-catch in the outfield, it seemed like Dusty Baker might be making a COVID excuse for Miles Straw. Are you buying that was because of COVID that he didn't make that catch?
No, I'm not buying that it's because of COVID that he didn't make that catch. Now,
because of the vaccine.
Right, yeah. Right. But, am I buying that the vaccine could negatively affect people? 100%. But
yeah.
Miles Straw probably doesn't make that catch 2 weeks ago, and he probably won't make it 2 weeks from now. He's just not that good in the outfield as a defender. He's just, even though he has all the physical traits you would need, he doesn't read the ball well enough. His first step isn't good enough to what you would want so that you can make plays that other guys can. So I'm going to say that, yeah, the vaccine forcing him out of the following game probably makes sense because people react differently to it. But blaming it on that, I'm not buying that excuse that that's why he didn't catch that ball.
You know what? I'm glad you brought up that kind of earning the benefit of the doubt, because another guy who's got excuses, and frankly, every single time I think they're valid excuses, except that he's had multiple instances where he's had to use a valid excuse, Lance McCullers, because you've got the vaccine with his last performance, going into last season, you have the pinched nerve. Going into 2 years ago, the torn UCL, valid. He was pitching right. with a torn UCL.
Right.
But McCullers is seeming like the worst luck of any starting pitcher on the Astros over the last several seasons.
He has, and you don't know, like, how do you break bad luck? Like, what does he need the rabbit's foot? Does he need to go talk to somebody that's going to lift a curse or something? Does
he need doctor? A
healing? I don't know if he needs a healing. I don't know what it is, but he's been having weird things happen to him over the past 2 years, to where you cannot get a consistent Lance McCullers, because when he's healthy and he's his consistent self, he's a top of the line, you know, guy in a rotation. He's a really good two in your rotation. And so, you know, Lance McCullers is just, I don't know how you fix that. I don't know how that works.
There was the game last year too, with like, there was a ridiculous number of caroms in the game that just everything got blown out over the course of two innings.
Yeah.
Some of it is just water finding its level, right? And then you have good luck in other outings. I think the thing that I'm inclined to make an excuse for with the Astros right now, for sure, is the inexperience of the starting pitchers. And as guys aren't able to go deep into games, I'll make the excuse for them. I don't know if I can continue to over the course of the season, though. You know, they don't the veteran pitchers that they have right now, compared to maybe when they had Gerrit Cole and Justin Verlander, and I think of some of the guys that could maybe work with and tutor the younger guys, Greinke and Verlander, different personality types. I don't know if Greinke's the guy to take somebody under his wing the same way Verlander did.
Yeah.
Odorizzi, we'll see, and he's only now just kind of getting to full strength. I'm willing to make excuses right now because of Odorizzi getting a late start and because the other guy's inexperienced. I've got about 2 to 3 weeks left in me, though, before I start losing my patience.
So my thing is, I'm a three-week guy. Like, it takes 3 weeks to create a habit, right? And so the last 2 weeks – the Astros have looked the way the Astros will look. After this week is up, the excuse is going to be out the window. Like, if you go 3 weeks doing a certain thing a certain way, you are that thing until you kind of bring yourself out of that. And so I think they got this week left. You know, they got 1 week left to where, all right, the 21 days are up. And you, if the Astros end up being, you know, losing 13 out of 15 games, it's like, all right, the Astros aren't very good right now. And are they going to continue to be not good? Who the hell knows? But right now, you're not a good team, and the excuses will go out the window.
So a man who offers no excuses, Darren Revelle from the Action Network, is coming on next. So actually, all of a sudden, last night I was wondering what we should talk to Darren Revelle about, and now all of a sudden with the NFL rule changes, with different NFT weirdness and other boxing news that's gone on, we got a whole lot to talk about with Darren Revelle coming up next.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Hey, Hey, Sean Pendergast is out until tomorrow. We've got former Texans offensive lineman and Pro Bowler Wade Smith in. I almost say teammate every time they're Wade, I guess because I've got Peter Pan delusions that I was younger than I actually am. But we also have Darren Revelle, a man who's perpetually 34 years old. Do we have Darren Revelle?
A man who's what?
Perpetually 34 years old. In my mind, you'll always be 34 years old.
Well, when I was 21, I was 34, but now I'm 60, I think. On Twitter, most people think I'm 55 or 60.
Do they think you have like, I guess maybe because you're always tweeting about financial things and whatnot. Maybe.
No, I think it's just because I've been a part of people's lives for a long time. So they think, that, you know, not realizing that I started in their lives when I was 21 or 22, they think I must be 60.
You know, you tweeted something out the other day that kind of surprised me, and I've actually sat and thought about it for a while. But you had tweeted out that BetMGM's CEO, Adam Greenblatt, says that the company believes that at maturity, I'm guessing of the gambling industry, 65% of the U.S. population will bet on sports, with the average gross gaming revenue at $90 per adult. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah. So it then came with additional clarifications afterwards. It was 65% of the adult population. And then another clarification that they would be able to reach 65% of the adult population. Not that those adults would actually make a bet. So it turned out to be a horrible sentence that I translated, that I transcribed in the moment, that was then backed down, and I guess I just like didn't delete it, nor did I by the time it was like 3 or 4 hours later, feel the need to like, oh, now I just got to go back and clarify this whole thing. So,
Boy, and then I made you relive the whole moment, because I'd written that down immediately.
That's okay. After someone on Twitter bet Adam Greenblatt that he would his right kidney that this was not true. you know, things changed relatively quickly.
Has there been any evidence that as gambling is legalized, has participation in gambling gone up more or less than people expected?
I think so. I mean, I think people feel a little bit better about legalized gambling versus, you know, not legal. I mean, I could just tell you anecdotally, being in now the state of record in New Jersey, you know, every sports conversation text with my friends, you know, turns into something gambling. And it's not just because I do what I do. I think it's just that it's available. It's easy. It's not like you're going to have to meet someone on the corner or enter your, you know, into some weird website with, 17 letters and numbers. So I think legalization definitely raises, you know, takes away the stigma for some people enough that, you know, perhaps they're either betting more or they're betting when they didn't bet at all before.
Darren, we're speaking with Darren Revelle from the Action Network. You can download the app. It's a really, really good app. And Darren is your source for all things gambling, all things gaming, all things memorabilia. And this is the big one in the NFL rule changes yesterday, where I thought of you immediately as well, was that the NFL has loosened the restrictions on numbers to where many more positions are going to be allowed to have single-digit numbers now. I would imagine for the jersey game and the apparel game and all of that, this is going to have a huge effect?
Yes, potentially, but a reminder that, you know, the buyout rules of if there's a jersey with a number, you know, still exist in terms of you can't change your name and you can't change your number if there's a tremendous amount of jerseys on the market. So this reared its head most prominently with Chad Ochocinco in 07 or something, when he wanted to change his name from C. Johnson to Ochocinco. And it was told to him that there were $4.8 million worth of jerseys in the marketplace. And that
is that abnormal because of who he was?
Yeah, at the time, yes. So, like, But a year before, I think it was like Joey Porter or someone wanted to change his number, and the number was $215,000. So, like, it totally depends. But obviously, and I think it's changed a little bit because they used to pre-print jerseys, and now Fanatics has the right through Nike and through the NFL to make jerseys on demand, which means that the rule still exists that if there are jersey, you can't just change your jersey out of jersey number out of nowhere, especially if you're a star. But because Fanatics could, you order a jersey and then they could make it on the spot because they have manufacturing capabilities. There's definitely fewer jerseys in the marketplace to have to make some sort of payoff if you have to.
So this is the thing now. If you're telling me that NFL players are going to have to purchase their own jerseys, is this just another example of the NFL being the ultimate generator of revenue and collector of profits, especially from their players, that they're making them buy back their own inventory? And that's something, apparently something that's been going on for years.
I think ultimately they are, in a way, you know, protecting the consumer. Although, again, Fanatics also has something called the jersey guarantee. Like, if there's a quick number change or if a guy leaves a team within like 18 months, you can get your money back, or you can trade it in for another jersey. I mean, I do think it makes sense, but as I just said, it made sense for 15 years ago. I'm not sure it makes sense today, or the numbers won't be as big today. Because again, these jerseys are made more on demand than they are being stockpiled in a closet or somewhere else. I am one of the few journalists who've gone to Fanatics like room of things that didn't work out, where, you know, years and years ago, being how big they are, they did have to stockpile a bunch of inventory. And I saw a room were full of 5,000 Jeremy Lin Knicks dolls.
Wow.
It's quite an image.
I tell you, we're speaking with Darren Revell of the Action Network. And Logan Paul apparently is going to fight Floyd Mayweather. And Floyd Mayweather put out on his Instagram that he's searching for a city to have the fight at. What type of dollars does a Floyd Mayweather fight bring to various cities that he goes to, especially in Vegas? And what type of dollars do you think he could bring with this particular fight, fighting a guy that really has not much experience in the fight game, fighting the lesser of the two boxing brothers between him and Jake Paul? How do you think this thing shakes up?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting, just looking at the Paul impact on boxing, you know, the influencer, you know, these guys between the Nate Robinson fight, between the fight this weekend, which got a tremendous amount of buzz. I'm not sure if I believe the 1.5 million pay-per-view buys, but Floyd still brings it. I mean, he brought it with Pacquiao. He brought it with McGregor. Assuming we're back to normal, I think there's going to be some lobbying for what's going to be the first big fight, the next big fight, with in terms of a full crowd and people really, you know. Yes, I know that UFC is bringing full crowds and stuff like that, but I think the first post-COVID fight, you know, has a tremendous amount of potential. And if you put Floyd in there and one of the Paul brothers, given what's happened, even if it's the lesser Paul, I think there's a chance for it to match or come close to what we had expected or had seen in pre-COVID.
Darren, I know you're big into the gambling world, and I'm actually looking at this article about people breeding digital horses and spending real money. And apparently you have some skin in this game. Like, how prevalent do you think this digital horse racing is going to get over the next few years? And are we going to come to a point to where, you know, real horse racing is going to be obsolete? Like, how significant of a factor in the marketplace do you think this is going to become?
Full disclosure. Well, so I guess a guy did an analysis of my stable this morning, and said that I have $166,000 worth of horses right now.
Wow.
So I spent about $93,000 for them. Listen, I this is the only NFT I have participated in. I don't in general love NFTs. I don't love the art NFTs. I've obviously reported on it. The complexity of this game, Zed Run, where you could breed horses, race horses, sell horses, you know, actually making money if you don't sell them. I mean, one of my friends had a high profile horse, put it into the breeding shed, went to sleep, woke up, and the horse had 7 kids and made him $5,300. I also do enjoy talking about this to see people's reactions on their face. Like, you know, it's like Cleo McDowell in Coming to America. Son, lay off the drugs.
See,
you know,
yeah, when I look at this, I get kind of excited about it. Like me being a horse breeder in real life, I don't think that's something that's possible. But me going online and digitally trying to put some stables together reminds me of being GM on the franchise mode.
Absolutely.
Of
NCAA, it's totally fantasy.
So,
yeah. No, it's totally fantasy. And what makes it so amazing is the complexity of it. Like, so what type of horse do you buy? Do you want to buy a Z1 Nakamoto horse, which is like the Japanese horse, which, you know, now if you want to buy one, those will cost $23,000-$24,000. Those are your best chances for a lottery ticket, the best breeding horses, the best racing horses. Like, you know, eventually they're going to sell the tracks. I'd love to own a track. I'd love to be able to be the guy who does these marketing deals. And I'd love to offer more money than the Kentucky Derby in 3 or 5 years as a track owner.
Darren, as an owner, you're able to get in and actually like look at the horse in a virtual room. Is that right? Like,
yes. Yes. So you can look at the horse. You can look at so there's 38,000 Genesis horse. This could be like
with virtual reality goggles on it, right?
Oh no! Yeah, there is a app where you could put your horse like in the room with you and like take a picture of it and everything, but you can't you. Right now, you could watch a race in sort of 3D. So like once you enter a horse in a race, usually it takes about an hour, and then an hour later the race happens and it's live on Twitch and live on the Zed Run site. But no, I have not put on AR goggles and like, you know, been a fake jockey and whipped the horse. I mean, that's when my wife would divorce me officially.
Well, you get to like, maybe they could let you artificially inseminate the horse virtually or something. Oh. I don't know. With the gloves and the machine and all that. Is the next step in this? Are there going to be?
By the way, for the record, the divorce would actually happen way before that. the divorce would happen when the disclosure of the real money I spent on this came through.
Yeah, well like, you're gonna make money though. You're gonna become a big time horse.
Well, I'm gonna horse. I mean, I watch it every day. I watch all the, you know, like any investment, I watch it every day. There's all these strategies. Do you want to breed? Do you want to race? Do you want to wait? You know, I do think it is the very beginning. And in general, I like the idea of gamified NFTs, NFTs as horses, the blockchain associated with that, rather than like a LaMelo Ball layup.
Darren Revelle from the Action Network. You can download the Action Network app. Follow Darren Revelle at Darren Revelle on Twitter. I really appreciate you coming on as you do every week, man.
Of course, we can talk horses for hours.
I'm not Jim Rome. I'm not gonna. We can't turn ourselves into a horse racing show just because we have a personal interest in it. So
awesome.
Thanks, Darren. Okay. Appreciate it. So, Wade, I had technical difficulties. Did you guys get to the Mayweather fight? I didn't want to jump
no
in on
question.
That. Without...
Yeah, we definitely knocked that out. We knocked out everything you wanted to get to, man. We We just kept the sheep going, you know.
Is the next logical progression in the Jake Paul versus Floyd Mayweather, or excuse me, Logan Paul versus Floyd Mayweather, is the next logical progression that there's going to be Jake Paul versus Floyd Mayweather?
It's got to, because if he makes, you know, let's say he makes $45 million off of a fight with Logan Paul, he's going to make probably $55, $60 million out of a fight with Jake Paul, because it's actually going to look better and it's going to build up, and they're going to sell the whole aspect of I'm defending the honor of my brother that you picked on, you know, a few months before. Floyd Mayweather is a businessman, and he's an excellent fighter, one of the greatest to ever do it. I consider him the greatest of all time that I've seen, just because he epitomizes the sweet science, like it's to be able to hit and not get hit. And so he does that better than anybody I've seen, but he's a businessman. And so if he can figure out ways to make money, he's going to make money, make, you know, $40, $50, $60 million a fight for the next 5-10 years. He's going to do it. And it's going to be some of these off the wall characters to get it done. Because when you look at the guys that he actually could box and it'd be like a legitimate fight, you can't sell that fight the same way, because there's nobody that's coming along that's going to make you say, you know, there's somebody that represents a different country that's going to draw a whole bunch of interest. There's nobody, you know, that's going to just bring that oomph to the table to where Floyd Mayweather can make that same amount of money he could doing these little exhibition deals. And then he also risks putting a blemish on his record.
I can't, you know, Jake Paul, because Jake Paul, for those of you listening that don't know who the hell we're talking about, Logan Paul and Jake Paul were both, they're YouTube stars. Logan Paul's the older brother, who I believe was a YouTube star beforehand, and then Jake came along. But Jake's the one that's more serious about boxing. They wrestled in high school, so it's not like they're unfamiliar with martial sports or anything. But Jake Paul's actually putting a lot of energy into it and actually training like an actual fighter. Have you ever actually boxed a boxing match?
No.
I've
done like some boxing training. What is Mike Tyson's old trainer that's not Custom Model, but the guy that was right under him?
Oh, I don't know.
You know, the guy that he actually commentates fights, and I can't think of his name right now, but he's the guy that worked a lot with Mike Tyson, New York guy. I can't think of his name right now. But that guy, when I was playing with the Jets, he came and would come and train us as part of our off-season training. We'd do OTAs and all that type of stuff. During the off-season, he would come and we'd do boxing training with him in the turf room. And it was a hell of a workout. But I've yet to actually get in the ring and box.
Part of it, well, you know, part of it is just your nerves too. Because I've trained boxing and with martial arts, just messing around in the off-season before, and that's hard. But like when you get, I did a couple charity boxing matches where it was like three rounds, and I want to say it was 1 minute round. And it was the most tired I'd been since I was like getting my ass beat as a freshman in high school wrestling, where I was wrestling seniors and they were just killing me. It's brutal. So I'll give the Paul brothers respect for actually doing the training it takes to step in and do that. But I will not. I refuse to actually pay any money in actual pay-per-view rights until one of them beats an actual fighter.
No question. Hey, shout out to the text line. They come through all the time. It's Teddy Atlas. Teddy Atlas is the guy that used to come train us when I was with the Jets, who was Mike Tyson's trainer over the years. He was a hell of a trainer, but Teddy Atlas, that's the guy's name. Text line came through for me.
Good job, text line. Good job, Wade. Really appreciate you filling in for Sean. Sean Pendergast will be back tomorrow. And Wade, where's the next place we're going to hear from or see you?
Man, I have no idea, dude. So like, some things pop up. If I'm free, then I'm here. You'll hear me on Synergetics commercials. They pop up every now and again.
Well, there we go.
There you go.
And follow him on Twitter.
Yeah.
Really appreciate it.
All day, yeah.
That's right. Really, really appreciate it, Wade. Everybody else, take care.
Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all.
All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 40% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 40% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.